Welcome to the 222 Paranormal Podcast with your hosts, Jen and Joe.
Hello, my brother. How are you?
What's going on?
Oh, everything's good. Everything's good.
Still quarantining?
Yep. Still working. Quarantining. No paranormal activity in the house this week. No, it's been quiet. Of course, I've been gone most of the time. But yeah, everything's been quiet.
I tell you what, I do those garden boxes. I'm making garden boxes, which a little bit of woodwork helps out, you know. It's past the time. Well, I've got order for like 12 of them.
Great. That's good news. Yeah,
it's great, but I'm super busy now. And I just want to relax, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's all right. You do it now, and then we can ghost hunt later.
Yeah.
Right. Everything's really exciting. Joe and I are going to do an investigation in June. We are going to the Dearborn Historical Society, which is really exciting. That place is renowned to be very, very haunted. So
it's going to be interesting.
Yes.
We have not been ghost hunting in forever.
I know. And, you know, one person that I really would love to ghost hunt with is our guest today. We have with us Dr. Christy Sumner. And I'll tell you a little bit about background, and then I'll introduce Christy. So Christy, in 2014, had coupled up with a couple of her passions of travel and the paranormal and history, and formed Soul Sisters Paranormal, an all-female team made up of herself, her two sisters, and two friends. They investigate some of the most historic and reportedly haunted locations in the U.S. And welcome to the show, Dr. Christy Sumner.
Thank you so much. I appreciate me being here, and thank you for having me.
So we first met at
Phantom Fest
yeah. In Virginia. We did. You were there with the ghost biker Miranda. And just amazing that you guys support each other and are able to go and investigate all over the U.S. Tell us a little bit about what sparked your interest in getting into the paranormal.
Well, to be honest with you, my sisters and I, started this out as essentially a girls' weekend. We wanted something that we could all meet up, because we live in different parts of the country. So we wanted something that we could do that was unique, that we could meet up, you know, 3-4 times a year and just do something a little bit different. And our grandpa was a former prison guard at Moundsville State Penitentiary, and before he became the chief of police of Glendale, West Virginia. And so we had a family friend in 2014 who sits on the board of Moundsville, and he said, you know, why don't y'all come up and stay the night at Moundsville State Penitentiary and kind of see what you find. So we did a very rudimentary investigation. You know, we had a couple of voice recorders, a couple of cameras, digital cameras, and, you know, wasn't really expecting a lot, but the evidence that we captured there we felt was extremely compelling. So after that, we kind of sat down and said, you know, we could do this, and we really wanted to formalize it and kind of give it a more professional look and feel, if you will. So we decided on Soul Sisters Paranormal, and we trademarked our name and our logo and just kind of started rolling through some investigations.
Your investigation at Moundsville, like, what surprised you about that place? Because I, you know, it's so historic, it's so haunted, and going into it, did you have a deep knowledge of the paranormal that went on there?
We did. We had done a little bit of background research on it. Again, for us, it was just going to be like an adventure, you know, kind of like one of those one-off type of things. So we did a little bit of research on it and some of the prisoners that were supposed to haunt the location. And so we went in, we had some questions and such. But after that, during the investigation, you know, we were hearing footsteps, unexplainable footsteps, because obviously we were the only ones there. Footsteps, door slamming, we heard laughter, we heard some male voices, which is, again, compelling for us because we're an all-female team. And so after that investigation, when we really started to formalize it, we knew we wanted to go back a second time and really hit it like a professional investigation, if you will. So at that point, we had night vision cameras and K2 meters and voice recorders and such. So we did some more background research on that, and that's when we really started to look at different trigger items as well. And we really kind of pride ourselves on being a team that kind of thinks outside the box a little bit with regard to trigger items. And so that one, like, it was interesting because there was a prisoner there named Red Snyder, who is now supposed to inhabit that location. And so his during our research, we found out that his big vice was watching Days of Our Lives. So every day he was in prison, they would wheel a TV in front of his cell and play Days of Our Lives for him. So what we did is we actually downloaded an episode of Days of Our Lives onto my laptop, and we put it in the cell, and we left it run for an hour, and we left it stationary. So we walked away and went to another cell block. And I really think that that recognition, if you will, of what he liked and what he was into really allowed us to connect with him. And I think that there were several instances during the night where we got some great, compelling evidence that we were speaking to him. And so that to me was very cool. So Moundsville for us, the two investigations that we've done there have both been phenomenal.
That, I tell you what, that's a great idea. I never thought about that. It's because we've heard that story too, where he, but who would ever think? Well you would.
It's showing respect to the spirits there, because you're not just coming in and saying, talk to me. You are understanding what motivates them and what makes them happy and makes them comfortable coming to you. Did you capture any EVPs from that experience of having the episode play?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So after, because the I only had allowed about an hour's worth of battery life on the laptop. So after the episode, the Days of Our Lives episode aired, the laptop actually shut itself down completely. So there was no ambient noise or anything from our laptop. And so after the laptop died, all you hear was silence. And then we captured an EVP, because we left a voice recorder in there as well. We captured an EVP that said, night, night.
Uh-huh.
And so that was pretty cool. And then when we went back in to do an EVP session, we asked, hey, Red, did you see the stuff that we left for you? And we got a very clear response of yes. And then a little bit later into the night, we had a K2 session. And there were, we had two K2 meters going. And both of them were giving different responses. So like we said, go to Michelle's meter and the meter lit up, or go to Chris's meter and the meter lit up. And so it was a very cool back and forth, what we considered positive responses. And then after we were winding down from that session, we said, that was very cool, thank you. And behind me, a male voice said, no, thank you. So that, again, it was very compelling to us. And, you know, to thank you for the fact that we kind of do think outside the box with the trigger items, because that is really what we like to do. We like to really delve into the research of these locations before we go and find something unique about the entities that are to inhabit that, whether they be spookers or whether they were, you know, tortured in some way. If we could provide something that would ease that pain, if you will, or acknowledge it at least, we feel that that allows us to have a connection with them.
You know, and we always talk about when we do our ghost hunts and that you always treat the spirits as if they're alive. So when we were at Moundsville, I didn't go up and go, oh, will you please talk to us? Is there anyone, you know, you kind of go, hey, talk to us. You know, you don't want to be disrespectful, and you don't, I mean, I don't scream and yell or that, but you're not going to go in there and talk to them like little kids. You just talk to them like normal. And it's so intriguing to me to know that you guys went in there and kind of did that. And being all female in a male prison like that, it's just adds that so much more dynamics to it.
Did you?
And it does. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask, so that was your grandfather that was the prison guard there?
He was a prison guard. So my grandpa was a prison guard there for a few years while he was in operation, and then he became the chief of police of Glendale, which is the town just north of Moundsville.
Okay.
And so my mom was born in Glendale, so we have that familial connection. She still has relatives and such that live in the area.
Yeah, and one of the things that I look at are Indian burial mounds and the relationship to Indian burial mounds, of how haunted a location is, and to literally have it right across the street. I just think it adds to it. You know, I mean,
it, you're absolutely right. It definitely does. It just adds that not only mystique, but also the energy. You know, it's compounded both by the emotions of the prisoners and what went on in that facility, as well as, you know, the sacred nature of the ground that surrounds it.
Yeah, and it kind of blew my mind when we found out about the sugar shack and the basement, how mm-hmm. when they didn't have enough guards or it was raining out, they would just lock the people in. You can't imagine what went on in there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Did your team have anybody go in any of the areas by themselves, like into the sugar shack or?
Not so much on that investigation. We went in as teams of two.
Okay.
And to be honest with you, the sugar shack was the area where we caught the least amount of evidence.
Yeah.
For us, it was Red Cell and up in the infirmary area, the medical area.
Oh, okay.
And that was completely intriguing because, as you've been there, the infirmary is on the second floor, and it's only accessed by those two big stairwells on either side. Mm-hmm. And so we sat smack in the middle, and everything was off. We didn't have any electronic equipment really on us beside our voice recorders. And we said, come on, it's time to take your medicine. It's time to come up and see the doctor. And clearly footsteps were running up the stairs, like to the point where we expected somebody to come around the corner. That's how clear they were to us. And, we captured those on the voice recorder and such. So it's just a very compelling place with regard to paranormal activity.
Yeah, we didn't get anything like that there, right? I think Jen had someone yell at her,
yeah,
was it?
I got an EVP prisoner yelling at me for asking a question. But, you guys travel all over the United States. What are some of the other famous locations, or famously haunted locations that you've been to?
Well, the farthest that I personally have traveled has been to Villisca. We went to the Axe Murder House, and that was absolutely fascinating. And then just a few miles down from that is Malvern Manor. So we investigated Malvern Manor. We've been to Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary. We just recently came back from the Lizzie Borden House. We've been to Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, Fort Mifflin, the Exchange Hotel, St. Augustine Lighthouse. We've done that a couple of times. The old Gilchrist County Jail. And we've actually been the first and the only team so far to investigate at the Ma Barker House located in Central Florida. So that's been a pretty cool experience for us.
It's incredible. Out of the places that you haven't been yet, what's on your bucket list? Where do you want to go?
I'd really like to get out to the Queen Mary. I've been trying a couple of times to get us onto the Yorktown there in Charleston, but we've been trumped by Boy Scouts both times, which is a little disheartening. My very biggest bucket list is to go international, and I'd love to get over to Leap Castle and investigate there. My only problem is figuring out how to get my equipment over there.
Yeah.
Because I'm very particular about how that gets to its locations.
Right.
And so there's a lot of places. And then, aside from those commercial, what I would consider commercial locations, we love just the small, one-off locations that maybe not a lot of people know about. The Farnsworth Hotel in Gettysburg, we stayed there. Yes, people know about it, but not a lot of people really get the chance to investigate it. And just the smaller, lesser known locations to us are extremely intriguing, just for the history as well as the lore and the paranormal activity.
Yeah, for sure.
Tell you what, if you want to go somewhere, go out to Jerome, Arizona. Me and Jen have been there, and the whole town is just amazing.
Yeah. The Grand Hotel.
It used to be a hospital during the copper mining days, and they turned it into a hotel, and it's haunted. It's amazing.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I'm actually going out to New Mexico in October and hoping to get some investigations in there. We're going out for a Paracon in Las Cruces in the middle part of October.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll get to squeeze in some investigations out there, whether or not go to a different state or not. But New Mexico is probably next on her list of big investigations.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about the Ma Barker House. I was listening to a show that you did with someone else, and you started talking about it, and it's super intriguing.
Oh, well, to me, it is a very intriguing location. It's we grew up probably about 10 miles from this location, and it's a house. It's a nondescript house in a little town called Ocklawaha, Florida. And it was in 1934, it was owned by a family named the Carson Bradford family, and they had built it as a vacation home. And so during the end of the 1920s, early 1930s, there was a very prolific bank robbery gang called the Barker Carpus Gang. And it was led by a woman by the name of Ma Barker, and she and several of her sons and a couple of other outlaws were made up this gang, and the J. Edgar Hoover was told to go out and apprehend these gang members after they had successfully pulled off a kidnapping. So J. Edgar Hoover was hot on their trail, so the gang decided to kind of split up for a little bit. So Ma Barker and one of her sons, Freddie, went down to Central Florida, and they rented this house, this lake house, under the name of P.C. Blackburn. And they were there for a couple of months, and then in January of 1935, J. Edgar Hoover's guys tracked them to that location. So the morning of January 16th, there was a shootout that ensued between Ma and Fred, who were in the house, and about a dozen FBI agents who had surrounded it. And the shootout lasted about 4.5 hours, and it is to this day one of the longest shootouts in FBI history.
Oh, wow.
So it culminated in Ma and Fred being killed. And the FBI found a large cache of weapons and such. And it really led to the downfall of the Barker-Karpus gang, because, you know, those two figureheads were killed by the FBI. So the interesting thing about the house is that the Carson Bradford and his family maintained it almost exactly as it was the day of the shootout. So you walk to the house now, and there's bullet holes in the walls. There's, you know, there's rocking chairs that have bullet holes in it. There's the chest of drawers. You can still see bullet holes in there. So it's a very cool piece of history. It's really like stepping back in time to 1935. And in 2016, Marion County actually, the house was donated to Marion County by the Carson Bradford family. And it was moved from its original location by floating it across a lake called Lake Weir. So it sits about 2 miles from where the shootout site actually was. So I was intrigued by it enough to ask the county if we could go in and be the first team to investigate, and they allowed us to do so because I wanted to see if the spirits of Ma and Fred were still there, if they stayed with the house, or if the house was, you know, pretty silent with regard to paranormal activity. And some of the stuff that we found there was extremely compelling. We got EVPs. We had a very intense spirit box session. Our REM pod was going off. We had some great REM pod activity and K2 activity. So for us, we were actually able to come away with some very compelling evidence.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we always talk about how, is it the land or is it the property that's haunted? And, you know, sometimes it's either or, sometimes it's both. But this one seems like the energy was imprinted in the actual house.
It was. And my response to that, when people ask me about that, is Ma and Fred had no ties to the land. You know, during their time as gangsters, they were essentially nomadic. They ran from the law, from every state, from the Midwest to, you know, to the east, to the northeast, and then down to Central Florida. So they had hideouts all over the country. And so because they had no home, as I would call it, I believe that they stayed with the house they were killed at because it really didn't have any other place to go.
Yeah. Now, do you think that, seeing that they were shot in there, is it possible that some of the, like, let's imagine the bullets go through their bodies and mm-hmm. is imprinted in the walls. I'm wondering if maybe that's one of the reasons why they're there also, is because those actually went through their body and now they're imprinted in the walls. You know, maybe took a little bit of their soul with them or something. I don't know.
It very well could be. And some of the stuff that we found was very cool because I think there's a mix of residual and intelligent haunting there or activity that's going on there. And the reason I say that is because it was a two-part investigation for us. The first part is we went in the eve of the shootout. So on January 15th, we went in and we set up equipment and we let it run throughout the night to encompass the morning of the 16th, when the shootout would have happened 83 years prior. So we wanted it to just sit by itself and in isolation and see if we could pick up anything residual. And we did, to the point where we had what we feel is chairs being moved. We had two times a male voice telling something to get out. And then at around 6:30 a.m., which is around the time the shootout was supposed to have happened, we had an EVP of two voices, one that said Freddie and the other said, yeah, Ma. And then the first one said, get ready.
Oh, man, I got goosebumps just hearing that.
And I got goosebumps as well, because to me, that's residual. Yeah. I think it's probably going to happen. You know, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen on that anniversary date. Now, after that, the second part of our investigation, we went back a week later, and it was just my twin sister and I, and we went back and we stayed the night in the house. And at that point, we had a spirit box, and we were asking questions in the room, and I call it the kill room. It's an upstairs corner bedroom, and it's the kill room. And so we set the spirit box down, and we kind of stepped out of the room, and immediately the voice on the spirit box said, "Someone's up here." Uh-huh. And I said, "What happened in this room?" And we got, "They murdered us." And I said, "Can you say the name Blackburn," which was the alias they used to rent the house. I said, "Can you say the name Blackburn?" And immediately the spirit box said, "Blackburn." And then another one of the gang members who was not killed in the house but was very close to Ma, his name was Alvin Karpis. And I said, "Can you say the name Alvin?" And immediately Alvin Karpis came through the spirit box. I never said the last name Karpis. Wow. So that to me was extremely compelling.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I would have just been like so excited to hear that.
I'd have to say that's probably, with regard to spirit box evidence, that's probably the best location we've been at and got that evidence.
Now, you guys have been at many locations, and I was noticing one location that you guys had gone to, and it was a funeral home, the Old Southern Funeral Home.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You guys stayed in a funeral home overnight. Correct.
We did. It was.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that was my twin sister and I. And what's even more compelling is we actually went to, that was in Kosciuszko, Mississippi. We did that about 5 weeks ago. And so they have two locations there. One is the funeral home. And then about a half a mile down the road, they also have an old prison. And so we actually did a unique collaboration with Ghost Biker, where she investigated at the jail the first night and we did the funeral home, and then we switched. Wow. And so then we did the jail and she did the funeral home. So she actually slept in there by herself, which was kind of cool. So she's got some very cool evidence from that. But yeah, those two locations, both jail and the funeral home, were extremely active. We're still going through the evidence and visual that we captured there. So we're still going through that evidence review, but so far all indications are that both locations are going to be pretty cool.
Have you ever felt afraid at any of the locations? Has anything like just scared the bejesus out of you?
I will say startled. We've never, at least for me, I've never been scared at a location. There are those instances where like a door will slam and I'll say, you know, what the hell was that? Mm-hmm. Or you hear footsteps running at you and you're expecting to be, you know, crashed into by something. Mm-hmm. But for us, when we get in there, it really becomes about finding the answers, mm-hmm. or finding some answers. And so we really just kind of get into this almost research oriented mindset. And if we really hear something, we almost run towards it. Now, like I said, there are some times where my stomach will drop and it'll be like, what was that? Or, you know, what the hell did I just hear? Mm-hmm. So we have those, I would say, Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary. You kind of get those feelings. And the funeral home in Kosciuszko, I will have to say, it's a different energy in that building. So we have had some of those, but for us, it's just, that's why we do it, mm-hmm. honestly. It's kind of like, it's kind of like getting on a roller coaster because you want the feel of the drop.
Yeah.
And for us, investigating is kind of like we want that suspense. We want that startled because we know we're probably on to some paranormal activity.
I always had, you know, just the thought, are funeral homes haunted? Because, you know, you think the spirits would move on. They would go back to where they came from or where they feel most mm-hmm. comfortable. Why would somebody be sticking around a funeral home, basically? So, you know, was this a historic or a more modern funeral home?
It was in operation for several decades. It closed, I want to say it closed in the early 2000s. I can't remember the exact date right off the top of my head. But mm-hmm. for me, I think because it is such a building of high emotion, I mean, mm-hmm. nobody really goes into a funeral home laughing. You know, you go in with this high emotion, this very intense emotion of pain and sorrow and loss. I think that has the tendency to imprint. And for me, I kind of believe that when we do pass, we have the ability to come back and see our funeral and see those that mourn for us. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the reason, you know, that could be the last place where some of these entities see their loved ones.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the reason, but I'll tell you, it was very, I don't want to say dark in the term of negative or demonic, but mm-hmm. I'll say dark in the fact that it was heavy, it was sad, it was sorrowful. And that's really the emotion you kind of feel when you go in there,
mm-hmm.
but not anything threatening, but more like a sense of loss.
Okay.
And so that's the best way I can explain it, because you're right. Why, if they had no connection to the funeral home, why would they stay there? And I just have to believe that it's the fact that you've got hundreds of people mourning somebody, and there's this great sense of sorrow and loss and sadness that it just kind of imprints itself into the walls, essentially.
Do you feel it's okay or justified or wrong, in your opinion, to go into a location such as a funeral home or a haunted location and tell the spirits to go to the light or to leave?
Personally, I do. And personally, I will never do it. And nobody on my team will ever do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's our place. If the owner of a location wants that to happen, then there are people they can call, priests or demonologists or something like that. But for me and for my team, that's not what we do, and that's not what we profess to do ever, because I feel like they're here for a reason, whether it be that they're stuck or they can't cross or that they're scared to. It's not my place to decide when somebody is going to go into the light or what I would have called, you know, ascend to the next level. That's not my place. They're there for a reason, and I'm just there to tell their story. And, you know, that's what we say when we go to every investigation. It's, let us tell your story. We want, so history remembers you in the way you want to be remembered. Tell us your story. And that's why I think when we went into the Ma Barker house, the spirit box said they murdered us, because to them, they were murdered by the FBI. They were tracked down and they were murdered. And so for me, that is part of the story that I'm going to tell for them. And that's what I put in the video. So to answer your question very long-windedly, for me, it's not my place to do that.
Yeah, because Joe and I were having this discussion. It was like, for us as paranormal investigators, we don't want the spirits to leave. We want them to stay there so we can talk to them, right? Like, but,
right.
You know, everybody has, you know, a different style of investigating and how they go about communicating to the spirits. Now, does your team have anything? I know that you use, like, different, think outside of the box, your objects, but do you have any, like, specific ways that you go about your investigation?
For us, what we do is I would consider very research-based, if you will, as far as it can be in the paranormal. We go in, and the first thing that we do is we do a day investigation. At every location, we always take a day tour beforehand, and we look for things probably some people might not consider. We look for streetlights. We look for where the roads are. Is there a stop sign nearby that a car would have to stop at? Anything that could create an ambient noise or environmental pollution that would explain paranormal activity. So we do a lot of looking around aside from actually looking at the location. And then we try to set up our equipment maybe a little bit differently than some other teams do to you know, really try to enhance what we think we can capture. You know, we do a lot of, you know, again, kind of trying to think outside the box a little bit. We use laser grids with our night vision cameras and such. And so we really have almost a set routine, if you will, on how we go about setting up our equipment. Before we go into the investigation, we'll say a prayer of protection and do that. But, you know, as far as I guess the word would be conjuring or anything like that, we don't do anything like that. For us, it's strictly about the research and trying to find answers for those that may want to tell us their story.
Now, you go to a lot of these different locations. Have you ever had a spirit basically cross over from a different location? Like, have you encountered the same spirit at several different locations?
That's a great question. There are some instances where there's been a couple EVPs that the voices sound similar,
okay.
But I don't have enough information to make the leap of, okay, they came, you know, we're brushy, and this is the same voice from West Virginia State Penitentiary.
Yeah.
So as far as I know, no. You know, for us, we're very, like I said before, we try to treat these entities as they are people. So for us, as humans, we want to be recognized, we want to be acknowledged. So we go in and we actually say, we acknowledge you, we're here to tell your story. You know, these are some trigger items essentially that we've researched that we think you may need, like water or cigarettes or something like that. But we're very forthright. We said, you know, we're here to talk to you. You're not allowed to touch us. You're not allowed to come home with us. You're not allowed to travel with us. You have to stay here. But for the best that we can do is tell your side of things.
Yeah.
And so I think talking to spirits like that is what has allowed us to, I think, get some very compelling evidence to support some of the activity and the claims that are going on in these locations.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you if you did have any spirits follow you home or anything like that, but you know, with you, you're basically telling them, no, you cannot follow me home. And that's one mm-hmm. of the important things we always tell people too, is, you know, whether you're religious or not, do some kind of like closing prayer or some kind of affirmation mm-hmm. saying you can't follow us home, you know?
Right.
So that's a good thing.
To kind of follow up on your point and take it a little bit further, I do think that there are spirits that have recognized us. So for example, with the Mott Barker house, after we did the investigation, I was so taken with the history in the house that I actually became a volunteer and a docent at the house.
Okay.
So I lead day tours of just, you know, non-paranormal people that just want a day tour of the house. So when I go in, I'm like, every time I unlock the door, I'm like, hey, Ma, hey, Freddie, you know, I'm here. And so then when I'm in the house by myself, I really do feel that they acknowledge me, that I acknowledge them, that there's a connection there. And that they know who I am,
yeah.
And that I'm not threatening to them. Same thing as when we went back to Brushy. We've been there twice, and we used the information that we captured from our first investigation on our second investigation. And to me, some of the responses seemed like they recognized us from our first investigation. So that was kind of cool to know that there's that. But as far as following something following us home, no, I've never had that.
Yeah, and you know, it's almost like, I don't know if you want to consider it friends or that, but it's almost like you're getting more friends by keeping on talking to these spirits over and over, and they do recognize you.
Mm-hmm. You know? Absolutely. And like I said, it's just, to me, it goes back to that acknowledgement that, mm-hmm. listen, I acknowledge you're here, and, you know, I don't know why you're stuck, but I want to tell your story and I want to get it right. So, you know, for example, when we went to Fort Mifflin in Philadelphia, we knew that there was a casemate there where a guy was in solitary confinement during the Revolutionary War. He was in solitary confinement for treason, and they ended up hanging him in the fort. So when we went down into the solitary confinement cell, we left water, we left a piece of bread, and we left some cigarettes. And I think the fact that we said, we're leaving these for you, we know it gets dark down here, we know you probably are thirsty, we're leaving this for you. And then we go off and do different things around the fort, but then we come back and kind of follow up on that. And it's like, we left you this water and this cigarette, and we got a very clear, audibly, my fellow investigator and I, we both heard it in the moment, we got a very clear thank you. And so again, for us, I think if you acknowledge them like that, rather than try to provoke,
yeah.
you're going to get that response.
Yeah. Don't just throw a REM pod in the middle of the room and say, make that light up, you know?
Right. Exactly. That's it. But you're absolutely right. You know, it's not, I'm not there to command anybody. And yeah. I don't think that they want to be commanded. They just want acknowledgement. And that's how we kind of approach it.
Does your team ever get called into any residential cases?
Yeah. Yes, we've been called into residential cases probably two or three times a year, I would say, residential and businesses. And a lot of those, you know, I think that the homeowner or the property owner, first and foremost, just wants validation that they're not going crazy, that somebody is there to listen to them and to say, you know, we're either going to get to the bottom of this, it's either paranormal activity, or, you know, there's a reasonable explanation for this. And so the first thing that we really do for those is I'll say, you know, let me give you a couple of my voice recorders. You put them up in your house and just go about your day. And if you feel you hear anything, you know, let me know and I'll mark, you know, just tell it to Mark or whatever. And then we'll go through that and I'll listen to it and see if we can capture anything that I can't explain. There have been a lot of instances where, you know, it's not paranormal. For example, we did a business. We had a business call us and say, you know, our night vision camera every time we lock the doors and we turn on our night vision camera, which is also motion activated, you know, it's been going off at night, and, you know, we can't catch anything. We haven't caught any movement, but something's setting off our cameras. We just got this artifact in here that we think is possessed and it's a demon, and, you know, come in here and you know, find it, da, 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 da. So when we went in for the night and set our equipment, and honestly, there's nothing. We didn't get any hits on anything. We didn't get any blips on anything. So we were there for 3 or 4 hours, and then we left our equipment to run, and we came back and picked it up the next morning. And what we found was the store was positioned, they had a glass storefront, but they had a mirror on the back wall. And so every time a car would turn onto this road, the headlights would hit this mirror and bounce directly up into their night vision camera and essentially turn it from night vision to day vision. And that's what was turning it on. And so I was able to tell them, listen, this I think is what's going on. And so they just essentially moved the camera angle and it stopped. So, you know, we do try to find those answers as well.
Debunked.
Yeah.
but you know, if you're not thinking along those lines,
yeah,
it may not be something that you consider. And you know, it's not that they're crazy. They just, I mean, think that car headlights bouncing off of a mirror would essentially blind your night vision for a couple seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, it's those type of things that we really you know, but for us, that was a cool investigation. You know, we got to go into the store at night, we got to, you know, really try to hone some of our skills. And you know, those, even investigations where we don't capture anything compelling to us, is still a great investigation.
Yeah, because I mean, that's one of the reasons why you get into this, so we can get into those locations. Mm-hmm. I mean, who else can say that they spent the night at a prison, you know?
Yeah.
Woke up, exactly. Seeing the sunlight come over the back wall or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it, exactly. And I use that phrase a lot. You know, we've been very fortunate to go to these locations, you know, from Villisca to Lizzie Borden to Brushy to Tala and St. Augustine and all those in between. And to me, that personal experience of going to these locations that are so historic and spending that time with my sisters, who are my best friends, that to me is worth any price.
Yeah.
And that is why we do this. You know, the history and really telling the story of these locations that some people may not know. You know, for example, we really like to get into different little knowledge nuggets, if you will. You know, some of the things about Fort Mifflin or the lighthouse that people come back and say, oh my gosh, I didn't know that, to really highlight those historical facts and those historically significant locations to us is really why we do this.
Yeah, and after seeing your videos and that on Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary, I want to go there so bad.
Right. Oh my gosh. What an incredible, I mean, just physically incredible looking.
Yeah.
You know, the way that it's set in the mountain. That's intimidating, yeah, right there.
It really is. You know, you turn the corner and you've got this grand prison, and just to know what it was there for and why it was built. And, you know, a lot of people, like, you know, they'll drive by it and say, oh, there's a prison, and just think the worst of the worst were housed there. And they were. It was a maximum security prison. But when you delve into the history of why it was created, you know, the state of Tennessee needed labor, and so they made these prisoners, it was free labor for them.
Yeah.
So they had these prisoners work in the mine, and you know, and they were able to extract that coal and make a profit off of it. That, I mean, that's a cool piece of history that people probably don't know when they drive by it. So yeah, when you turn the corner and you see Brushy, it's like, wow, this is pretty intimidating. Same thing with Trans-Allegheny. I mean, you see pictures of that, but to drive into the gates of Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum and see this grand building, you know, this hand-cut stone building, is just incredible. And, you know, you get that feeling everywhere you go. The lighthouse, you know, West Virginia, even Lizzie Borden, just to know that you're going to be walking into this place where, you know, decades or centuries ago, these incidents happened. It's just, it's the coolest feeling.
Yeah. That's the feeling I got when we pulled up to West Virginia, because I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah, Joe didn't know much about it at all.
No,
so he was kind of going in blind.
And we pull through this neighborhood, and you turn the corner, and you look, And you look down one side of the road, you look down the other, and the whole building is the road. It's right. Like, oh my God, this place is huge.
Yeah. And then you just kind of follow the rabbit hole of history, if you will. And I don't know if y'all had a chance, but if you drive down the road a little bit, you find the graveyard where those who couldn't afford a burial, that's where they put them. So you've got this field with these little metal markers.
Oh, I didn't see
and
that.
And that's all there is. And you walk through it, and it's like, you know, these were criminals that were at the prison. And you just kind of follow those history trails, if you will. And it's just fascinating to really delve into some of this.
Yeah, one of the things that me and Jen always do when we go on, you know, our trips and that is we always ended up at the cemetery. And we always say, mm-hmm. Well, that's where, if you want to learn the history of a location, go to the cemetery, because that's all the... Where the names of all the roads and everything.
Yeah,
and,
all the history, most of the history of the town you can find in the cemetery.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's what we did in Villisca. You know, that's what we did at Lizzie Borden. And, you know, Lizzie Borden actually had her name changed a little bit and from Lizbeth, and because she didn't want anybody to mess with her marker.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So So there's just those little bits of history. And then if you go to those cemeteries and you just kind of walk around and it's like, you know, there's just so much that, you know, people don't really appreciate anymore. And that's the sad fact. And again, that's why we do this. You know, if we can get people to go to Brushy, even if they're not into paranormal, if we can get people to go to places like Brushy or St. Augustine or the old Gilchrist County Jail or something like that, mm-hmm. just to appreciate it for what it was and what it stands or stood for, that to us is a very cool thing about what we can do.
Yeah, one of the things that we, one of the locations that we go to in Ohio is one of our favorite places to go is the Gill House. And there's a history there of like Henry Ford and Edison and them kind of people were there. Mm-hmm. But every time I go there, the last few times I've went there, I went to the cemetery first and actually saw mm-hmm. their tombstones of the families that lived there. And it mm-hmm. does, it brings like, I don't know if you say, it puts a face to the name, I would say, even though you're not seeing the face.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, before we did Villisca, we went to the cemetery and, you know, to see all of the kids' headstones and then the mom and the dad, you know, that is just, it's a profound sight, you know, to know that these were really real people. You hear the stories, but, you know, to really make that connection of there was this house where somebody went in and was so heinous that they had no problem taking the axe head to the face of a child, multiple children. It just kind of really makes it real, if that makes sense.
Did that location have a dark feel to it, or do you think it's just been like over investigated?
It had an interesting feel. There were certain places that, like the attic, I'll put it this way, it was a lot smaller than I envisioned in my mind. Mm-hmm. So the house itself is very compact. And so when we went into the attic, which is where the killer was supposed to have hid until the Moore family went to sleep, that had a very different feel. But just the house itself, kind of walking into it, it was a heavy feel, not so much ominous or demonic or anything like that. Just a kind of a sadness. I kind of liken it back to the funeral home there in Kosciuszko. Just kind of a dark, a heaviness, if you will. But we captured several very cool EVPs in that house, but we actually had an amazing K2 session outside on the porch. Uh-huh. With who we believe we're talking to, Sarah Moore, which was the mother. Mm-hmm. And it was very compelling because we had two K2s, a gray one and a black one. And we were asking, you know, if you can confirm that you're Sarah, light up the black one to red. And it did. And then we said, okay, stop. Now, just to confirm one more time, if you're Sarah, light up the gray one to red. And it did. And they were sitting side by side. So if you thought if there's some type of other energy source, both of those K2s should have lit up. But it was actually going to the different K2s on command. So I think we were able to establish that we were speaking to Sarah Moore it was kind of a fascinating place, honestly. But as far as the heaviness, no, just kind of more of a sad feeling, I guess.
Have you been to Mansfield Prison in Ohio?
No, we haven't been there.
Put it on your bucket list.
yeah, that one. And, you know, we haven't been to several of the big ones, like Waverly. We haven't done that yet. Again, we like going to those locations, but, you know, in our mind, some of those have been over-investigated. Yeah. So we try to stick to some of the smaller ones. We did Prospect Place in, the name escapes me.
Is that
Ridgeway.
One in Cleveland?
No, it's in
Southern
Ohio.
It's in Ohio.
Yeah.
Trenway, Ohio.
Okay.
And that was fascinating. It just that was a stop on the Underground Railroad, and we caught some interesting EVPs and a weird kind of light anomaly that we couldn't explain. But it was kind of cool because, you know, you asked earlier in the session about if I could tell different voices. And some of the EVPs that we've gotten at these different locations, you know, you can tell if they're a child. I've got children's EVPs. I've got old men EVPs that just kind of have that old man type of feel. But we got one at Prospect Place, which was kind of cool. To us, it sounded like an African-American woman saying they had to talk to us. And it was neat because that was a stop on the Underground Railroad. Mm-hmm. And so we were able to kind of tie that together with that. And it was a very cool EVP, probably one of the best that we've captured. I put it up in our top 10 for sure. So that was a very cool place. But to answer your question, that's the only place that we've been to in Ohio.
Well, there's so many places here. I will send you a list of the coolest places.
Yes, please do so. Because we do get up to, just because of the family connection, we do get up to Glendale, West Virginia a couple times, if not a couple times, at least once a year. So, you know, we're in that area for sure.
You know, that's interesting too. When you're talking about at the Valeska X murder house, talking about the black and gray K2 meter, it just reaffirms that they can see, you know, that, I mean, they can actually see us. And it's just that kind of stuff blows my mind, especially when you're sitting in a room and you're getting responses on a K2 or whatever, and it's like we can't see them obviously, but they can see that we are here. It just that just blows my mind.
Absolutely. And it really does kind of make it worth it, kind of what we're doing, I think, when you do get that validation. Obviously there's going to be skeptics and it's going to be cynics about what we do, and we're not trying to convince anybody. We just put forth what we consider compelling evidence that I can't explain. But to be able to, in my mind, have that connection, it's really profound. It really is a profound feeling when you capture some of these EVPs, and you know you either know what they're saying or the reason they're saying it. And I say that because we went to Hales Bar Dam, and it has a series of tunnels that runs under the river. And at one point in its history, there was an accident and a couple kids were killed in these tunnels. And during our EVP session there, one of our investigators said, "Why are you still here? Why haven't you moved on?" And we got a very clear child's voice saying, "I can't, I'm stuck."
Oh,
and
wow.
To me, it was heartbreaking, but it explains why he's there, and it was intelligent. So you're right. They can see us. They can hear us. They can interact with us. And that, to me, makes it seem like, you know, the plane between this world and whatever's next is so very thin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just don't think people realize that. You know, we get so busy and in life and doing things, it's hard to stop and quiet down and listen for, you know, maybe your relatives who have passed on or somebody who is on the other side and maybe nobody's contacted in a while. And it's just, you know, looking for some interaction or some validation that they're still around.
But you're absolutely right. And I use that saying a lot, you know, for me, most people hear, but not a lot of people listen. And that's what you have to do in this field. You know, even if you're walking through a cemetery in the middle of the day, we carry a voice recorder with us.
Yeah.
And because, everybody asks me, well, why do you only get voices at night? My answer is you don't. We've gotten a lot of EVPs during the day. The difference is I take a voice recorder with me and I listen to that entire recording. Not a lot of people do that. Not a lot of people will go visit, you know, Fort Mifflin and carry a voice recorder with them. So I think the spirits are there. Now, do I think that every person who has passed is still here? I don't. I think there are that spirits are here for a reason. And once that reason is resolved, they will ascend to whatever next. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the ones that are here, I think are here for, like I said, that reason, and to communicate with them and to be able to tell that story. I think if that's what our job as paranormal investigators, that's what we do. That's what we are here for.
Yeah. We always say when you pull up to a location, turn your recorder on right away when you get out of the car, because that's when you get a lot of them is when you're. A lot of people say, well, we were setting up and we got one, but we didn't capture it. It's like, that's when it's a perfect example of you're going to get them all the time. You just got to pay attention.
Exactly. When we went to the old Gilchrist County Jail, I've been there a couple of times. And the first time I was fortunate enough to go with Miranda Young from Ghost Biker. So it was just she and I in this small prison, this small jail. And so we were just doing our day tour, and I had a voice recorder going, and she had her camera going, and she pans through one cell, and she's going into the next, and very clearly you hear a man's voice saying, "Hey, come back." And, you know, we caught it. We caught it on it. She heard it. I heard the tail end of it. We caught it on voice recorders, her camera. You know, it's on the video that I produced for it. And it's, again, that very compelling. If we didn't have that running and we were just walking through, we would have missed it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm with you. You have something running, and hopefully you'll be able to capture something.
Yeah. Hold on, Jen. Oh, sorry, Jen's staring at me.
All of a sudden my parakeets went crazy and they started barking. Something spooked them out in the living room. It was probably my shadow figures.
Well, that's a good point. What do you think shadow figures are?
Yeah.
I do think that they're just a manifestation of, you know, the activity that we're looking for. We captured a very good shadow figure at Fort Mifflin. It's probably the best piece of evidence that we've had. And so we had a laser grid set up, again, in that solitary confinement cell that I was telling you about, that casemate. It was, like I said, it was underground, about 7 feet underground. There is no access to it except this one door. We set the camera up in the doorway with the laser grid right in front of the camera. So there's no way anybody could have stepped in front of this camera and tripped that laser grid. But we have a shadow figure that walks through it. And by my judgment, it's probably about 5.5 to 6 foot tall. And I think it's the same man that told us thank you for the cigarettes and the water. And like I said, it's completely the vacant area. Nobody was there at the time. And it just kind of walks through. And I just think it's the manifestation of that the gentleman that was in that cell.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I think I've heard that place is extremely active. Yeah, and I think anytime you have a fort or some historical location like a Gettysburg, you could go to any part of that and get something. Like you mentioned, you had been to Gettysburg. You can go to the grocery store and see a ghost there, right? Like the battlefield is everywhere.
Exactly. You know, Fort Mifflin was extremely cool for us. You know, when we, again, kind of going back to those different trigger items, when we first got there and we set up all of our equipment and everything, the night was very still with regard to activity. And I was actually starting to get a little bit dejected. I was like, you know, what's going on here? But a couple of things happened that I think really propelled the energy. The first one was across the river, and this happened about 9:30 that night. For some reason, a business across the river started setting off fireworks. Mm-hmm. And you could hear the reverberation across the water. It was just boom, boom, boom. And if you kind of close your eyes and think about it a little bit, it sounded like gunfire, like cannon fire.
Yeah.
And, you know, the men at the fort held off a complete British bombardment for days so Washington could get his army out of there.
Wow.
And so, you know, I think that stirred some activity. And then the second thing was, as I told you, they hung one of the prisoners there. So what we did is we had all of our walkie-talkies. So we left our walkie-talkies in these different casemates, and then we all met in the middle of the fort. And then I had my walkie-talkie, and we played the Revolutionary War drum beat for an execution. Oh, and we transmitted it over all of the walkie-talkies. So even though we weren't in these casemates, then you would hear the sound. And I'm telling you, after that, the activity really picked up that night. So again, just kind of going back to what they would know and what they would hear and kind of what they would see, I think really allowed us to find some compelling evidence that night.
I think anytime you use music in an investigation, it will definitely spark, you know, everybody has something that touches their heart, you know, a song, and takes you back to that time. So, you know, we've had great success in getting activity playing time period music.
Plus, I think music is vibrations too. And I feel that's a big factor in it also.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it, again, if you can kind of resonate with them, with the activity that's supposed to be there, the spirits that are supposed to be there, you know, it's one thing to say, hey, touch this K2, but you know, if you're in the Revolutionary War, obviously you don't know what a K2 is.
Yeah.
But if you say, you know, there's a red light in front of you, can you touch that or something like that, something that they would know or can really connect with and understand, you have to be mindful of that as well. And I think we do a good job of that on our investigations.
Yeah. I've always said you go into a location, you treat it as if they're there in front of you. And, you know, if you go in there and say, light up this meter, they don't know what that is, you know. And they, I always say too, is, you know, this is something we made, this isn't magic, and it won't hurt you, because a lot of the spirits, they're not used to electricity, and they're used to candlelight. So if you tell them to touch the light, they're not going to touch it because it burns, you know. You got to put that in your mindset of talking to them as if they're in their time. And that's, you know, I'm big on time slips and all that stuff too. And I always say, in our time, this is this, or, you know, we're in our time, you're in yours. You may hear us and not see us, but we're here.
Yeah, and absolutely. And again, it's finding that way to make a connection. Mm-hmm. And obviously you have to step back into their mindset. You can't expect them to jump forward into yours.
Yeah.
So just having that, just to go in with that, you know, that premise, I think allows teams like us and like yours to really connect. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're trying to do, honestly, is just connect and try to get that information, try to get that story.
Yeah. Because how do we know that they're not sitting in their living room hearing ghosts and it's us?
Right.
You know, we don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And see, and that's the thing. You're absolutely right. We don't know. And so, you know, obviously I'm not going to disparage anybody in the paranormal community, but when you have these people that claim to be experts, that really kind of gives me pause and makes me cringe, because to me, there are no experts in this. There are always going to be questions. We are never going to find the answers until we ourselves die.
Yeah.
And, you know, to claim that you're an expert in something that's unknowable is to me, you know, that's a little bit, that's grandstanding.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, you know, I've had a couple people on podcasts say, you know, you're an expert in the paranormal. I have experience in the paranormal. I'm not an expert in the paranormal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's been people that have been doing this much longer than I have. And, you know, they have their techniques and their ways, and hopefully some of those I can emulate. And hopefully somebody will look at us and say, hey, that's a cool idea. Let's use Days of Our Lives in Moundsville. And I'm hopefully some, I can put forth knowledge that somebody can use, and I can gain knowledge from somebody else. But to say that we're experts in this, to me is that really is a turnoff.
Yeah. It's a big cringe factor, you know, and
it is. It really is, you know. But then, you know, there are those teams, such as teams like yourself or Ghost Biker or, you know, Jake Fife or Steel City Paranormal, those people that are actually in it for the history and really want to just kind of do this to tell the story. You know, those are the people that we want to connect with and be involved with and collaborate with, because we feel we have the same mindset.
Yeah. I mean, I admit it, I'm in this to get into the old buildings. You know, the places that we can't get to, you know, and you've spent the night at, you know, prisons, and really the only one I've spent the night at was Moundsville, but it's such a cool thing to actually say, yeah, I spent the night in prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I do
legally.
Yeah.
You know, I recommend Brushy and you know, all of those other locations as well. It's just a fascinating thing, and you know, yeah, you'll have those skeptics, you'll have those cynics that say, well, you know, I don't believe in ghosts, and that is absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. I am not trying to convince you. I am not trying to sway you in any way. What we do is we go to these locations, and I can tell you who's there and who's not there, like a child or an old man or an old woman. I can tell you who's there and how we did our investigation, and these are things that I cannot explain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if I'm there with four other women and we get a child's voice talking to us, I can't explain that.
No.
So that's what we do. If anybody wants to come and have an intelligent conversation with me about what they think it is, that's perfectly fine. I would love to have that conversation, but you know, to come at me and say, well, that's just false, and you know, I've got really no time for that.
Yeah, and not give you anything to back up what they're saying. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, everybody has opinions.
Yeah.
You know, and
they do.
But
they absolutely do. And you know, it's being like me trying to convince you that my religion is correct. I'm not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of the same thing here. It's just, I'll tell you, I don't have the answers. None of us do. We will find the answers out someday, I'm sure. But for right now, we're just kind of doing the best we can and trying to see if we can gain some knowledge about what happens next. You know, it's interesting. It's like saying, you know, my way is the best way or whatever, but you know, you can go to Moundsville and I can go to Moundsville, and you will never capture the same evidence that I do the way I captured it. And I will never capture the same evidence that you do. The evidence that I capture was that moment in time, and that's unique to me. The evidence that you captured was your moment in time, and that's unique to you. So for somebody to say, well, I have the holy grail of evidence, to me, again, that's kind of grandstanding, because I don't think you do.
If
that makes sense.
If somebody wanted to get a hold of Soul Sisters Paranormal or had some issue maybe in their home or their business, how would they get a hold of you and your team?
You can go to our website at www.soulsistersparanormal.com. And our email address and all of our contact information is there. And we also have a Facebook page, Soul Sisters Paranormal. And we're on Instagram at Soul Sisters Paranormal. And we're pretty active on Facebook as well as answering any emails that come through on our website.
Yeah, and I've been to the website. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I stalk you on there. Yeah.
Oh, thanks. Well, I've actually got to go on and update it a little bit tonight. I just booked another investigation for North Carolina in the next couple of weeks. So I'm really excited about that. And just some different things that we're doing. Unfortunately, you know, everything that we're going through right now with COVID, some things have been pushed back. But we're taking part in a online paracon on Sunday, May 3rd, which is going to be kind of cool. I mentioned the fact that we'll be out in New Mexico in October. I'm actually going out there with Ghost Biker and just doing some different collaborations with her. So that's a very cool relationship and partnership there. And, you know, and we're welcome to collaborate with other teams. You know, we'd love to get out there and do some collaborations, do some investigations, do some different things, fun things, and just really to meet other people in the paranormal communities would be a big win for us.
Yeah, like going out on a paranormal investigation with 222 Paranormal.
Yes. Come to Ohio. Bring all the sisters. We'll have a barbecue, paranormal investigation. I have lots of haunted places here in northwestern Ohio to take you to.
Okay, well, you come to Ohio, and then I'm inviting you to Florida.
Yes.
I need warm weather.
Yeah, we have a day in Florida for sure.
Yeah.
But no, the invite's always open. If you guys want to come down to Florida at any time, we'll definitely hook you up with some cool investigations.
Awesome. We appreciate that. And we appreciate you coming and spending your time with us and giving all our listeners some background into Soul Sisters Paranormal and some of the amazing locations that you've been in and some of the paranormal activity that you've experienced.
Yeah, and you're always welcome to come back on.
Yes, bring the sisters on. We'll have a Kiki.
Absolutely, we'll definitely do it. But, you know, you guys have been very supportive of us since we've met, and I really appreciate that. It's very heartwarming, and you guys are awesome.
Thank you. Oh,
My brother and his ego.
Yeah. I need a separate suitcase for my ego.
He does. Yeah,
that's why you have that trailer right there. Right,
that's right.
Well, Chrissy, we really appreciate you coming on. And if everybody get on soulsisterparanormal.com and check out their website. And if you
check out all their stuff from
there. Yeah, check it all out. And we will talk to you once again. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
And
thank you. Y'all have a great night.
Thank everyone else for tuning in this week. Stay at home. Stay warm. Stay
safe. Healthy.
Keep the sniffles away.
And don't eat all the snacks in one day.
Yeah, leave me some chips. And thanks, everyone. We'll leave you with a little bit of 60 Second Crush. And we'll see you next week.
Talk to you. Bye, everybody.